Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:22 Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 23rd, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, if we have a look at really what's been happening this week, then I guess it's appropriate to start off to talk about Europe, because you've got the European elections going on. And, well, the UK's Eurosceptic UKIP party is making some pretty solid gains in local elections. Well, we'll see how they come out in the European elections. Well, that was widely expected, but I guess in the Netherlands, if you look at Geert Wilders' party, well, then they're coming in fourth place, having expected to top the polls. That's not going to happen. Well, the majority of countries aren't going to vote until Sunday, so we'll probably have a total result at the beginning of next week. But we can probably anticipate that the Le Pens are going to do rather well in France, and that we're going to get a more solid Eurosceptic bloc in the European Parliament. Well, that's going to make for some vocal debate, but it doesn't really derail the fact that the majority of decisions are made in the upper houses, and particularly at the European Commission level in the Council of Ministers. So, in many respects, the European Parliament is a talking shop. But what the vote, well, the fact that you're going to have a low turnout on one hand, and that you're going to have this Eurosceptic bloc being elected in a wide span of countries, well, that's going to put pressure on the ECB. It's a powerful vote to say that people are getting fed up with fiscal consolidation. Well, the ECB engaged in quantitative easing for a brief period in 2011 through its LTRO program. That was the outright buying of bonds. It's unwound the entire program over the last 18 months, and as a result, it's not that surprising that a number of European countries have slipped back into recession. The blame for that can be squarely laid at the fact that the ECB hasn't, far from being accommodative, has actually been withdrawing liquidity from the system. Well, the ECB's balance sheet turned higher about 2 weeks ago. The June 5th meeting is widely anticipated to announce that there's going to be some form of additional monetary easing, and the euro is down from about 140 to 136 and a quarter. Well, that's the region of the 200-day moving average. Well, in the comment of the day today, I've posted the ratio of the Fed's balance sheet relative to the ECB's. And what you see is that there's a mild loss of momentum on the downside. So the Fed's balance sheet continues to expand, and the ECB's has been contracting, but it may be beginning to turn. Well, in the period in 2011 when the euro was quite weak, well, it was in no small part because the ECB was engaged in this LTRO program. If something similar is begun again, well, then we can anticipate that that's probably going to be a headwind for the euro. So while it's oversold in the short term and there's potential for a bit of a bounce, well, the 140 area may be it might not just be a short-term high, it could potentially be a medium-term high, and a lot will depend on exactly what the ECB is going to do. Well, for the last number of years, we've regarded these markets as liquidity-fueled, and much of that has been because of the Fed's massive expansion of its balance sheet. But, of course, we're in a global economy, and an increasingly important aspect of the global economy is liquidity. Well, the Fed has been tapering the amount of additional money that it is putting into the system, but it is still adding money on a monthly basis, and because the US government's deficits have been decreasing, the number of treasuries that have been issued has been declining, so the Fed's balance sheet has continued to expand. Well, the ECB may be about to start expanding its balance sheet, and the Japanese remain committed to weakening their currency. Well, they haven't been particularly active this year. I guess they've been attempting to put through this VAT increase and see how the market was going to take it. But the yen continues to trade around 100 to 102 relative to the dollar. and it hasn't firmed much beyond that level. So you have, well, three of the world's largest central banks really quite active in increasing liquidity. Well, when we start to look at the wider market, well, something that people had issues with last year is that the market took off in January and a lot of people missed it. Well, they felt that they would be chasing the market, and a lot of people underperformed as a result because the market never really pulled back. And then bonds pulled back very sharply in the middle of the year, and that wasn't used as a buying opportunity by many for the stock market, so that when the stock market began to really pick up pace in the last couple of months of last year, people were underweight. Well, when you've been underweight and you were overcautious, and then you have some very difficult discussions with your investors, well, then a lot of people have given up hedging this year. And people want to at least perform as well as the S&P. Well, the S&P hasn't really done much. It's up 2.8% so far this year. And I think it hit a new all-time high in here today. It's at 1900 on the S&P. Well, the VIX is close to an all-time low. It was briefly lower than it is right now in March of 2013. And, well, it didn't stay at this level for very long. When we look at what exactly is happening out there in the wider market, well, the breadth of the market has been deteriorating. We've seen that the majority of indices had pulled back and majority have bounced. There's been a flight from the more speculative elements of the market, such as new technology or biotech or small caps, into what many deem as quality companies that have solid cash flows, long records of dividend growth. Well, in summary, the types of companies that we regard as autonomies. Well, that's generally when people are a little bit more wary. Well, if we look at what's been happening over the last 4 years, it's been a liquidity-fueled rally. And the types of instruments that do best when liquidity is both abundant and cheap are those that are interest rate sensitive. Well, that's small caps. Well, the Russell 2000 took off like a rocket. But it has lost momentum somewhat, and it's bouncing right now from the region of the 200-day moving average. That's really just where it needed to bounce. It's the lower side of the range that's evidenced for much of the year, and it really will need to hold those lows to avoid top formation completion type characteristics. Well, biotech, well, that represents really the cutting edge of technological development, and biotech was also one of those sectors that did spectacularly well during the internet boom. It experienced considerable consolidation in the aftermath of that crash. And we're now at a stage where some of the therapies that have been promised are beginning to come to market. So it's had a pullback. It's back in the region of the moving average, and it was a steep pullback. Some of those companies are still expensive on a PE basis, but it remains very much a growth market. Well, the fact that you've had some of the growth in the market and the interest rate sensitive sectors pulling back sharply is generally an indication that people are getting a little bit antsy about where the interest rate cycle is likely to go in the next 6 months. Well, cyclical-oriented sectors have been moving to positions of outperformance. Well, people are looking at the banking sector, and they might still be a little bit wary of it, but it's not expensive. Well, neither is the resources sector, and commodity prices have been turning upwards. Well, nickel is currently trading around 20,000. Well, it was closer to 15,000 at the beginning of this year. Well, both zinc and lead have first step above the base type characteristics. Well, copper, having been it broke down below the $3 area on that COMEX contract earlier in the year, posted a failed downside break, and it's currently trading around $3.16. Well, they're responding to the fact that economies are generally no longer priced for calamity, that Europe is still has a lot of problems, has social issues, has issues with people accepting the policies that have been initiated that have been really quite deflationary. But the fact that the ECB is sitting there and willing to lend to the banking sector and ensure that we're not going to get a worst case scenario, it means that the European economy is slowly but surely recovering. Well, the US economy, despite the fact that one can argue one way or the other whether it's been an even recovery, and it most definitely has been an uneven recovery, but it is a recovery nonetheless. Well, the mining sector has gone through massive rationalization. The excess supply has been chipped away at, and there's been an awful lot of write-offs. Well, that's helping to support prices. So that is also helping to stoke interest in cyclical sectors, such as the resources sector. Well, you're definitely seeing in the European energy sector that the valuation, the valuations are likely to rise in Europe to meet those in the US, and that's part of the reason that you've had companies like Statoil and Totalfina and Royal Dutch Shell rallying. And it also increases the possibility that you're going to see companies like BP sustain breakouts. Well, Noble Energy broke its progression of lower rally highs last month. Well, Anglo American's not that far off. Alcoa has been rallying powerfully for nearly a year. Well, when you start to see that resources sectors move to positions of outperformance into, it's really an indication that, well, they're responding to the way that the cycle is right now. They're not really forward looking. And also that people are looking for something that hasn't yet rallied. Well, that's certainly the case with a number of these resources sectors. Well, we can say for something like the S&P that it's been rallying for the better part of 4.5 years, but that, well, resources in many cases have been trending lower for that exact same amount of time. So they're trading at a discount relative to the wider market, and people are starting to bet that we could play catch up. Well, when we look at the bond markets, it's also pretty interesting in here. Well, US Treasuries were up by a full half point in here today. They've been weaker for much of the week. Well, when you look at the price on the 30-year, well, it completed an almost year-long base in the last 2 weeks. Well, when you look at the S&P and you see that it is just about making a new high and that volatility is close to an all-time low, well, you have to think about where we are in the cycle. And despite the fact that the market is pushing new highs, you have to conclude that we're pretty mature in that cycle. Well, there's nobody initiating really large short positions in here. People don't generally think about topping activity until they're presented with some form of evidence. And there isn't really any great deal of evidence for the wider markets in here at the present time. However, getting more bullish after 4 years already on the upside isn't perhaps the most advisable situation. This is probably more of a time for thinking about preserving capital rather than capital appreciation. Well, government bonds rallying the way that they're rallying right now isn't particularly good news for perceptions about the outlook for the wider economy. The 30-year breaking out is, well, it's probably the result of people starting to think about a flattening yield curve. Well, so far, the flattening of the yield curve has been because people are bidding up prices on the long end rather than selling on the short end. There's a passionate discussion going on in institutional circles as to whether the Fed will raise interest rates a year from now. And a lot of people just don't believe that they will. They think that there is just too much slack in the market. And people highlight, quite rightly, that an awful lot of the home equity release loans are floating rate, and that it would put an awful lot of consumers under great pressure if interest rates start to rise. Well, against that, are we seeing an economic recovery? Well, perhaps the most important thing that happened in government bonds last year was that the total return on 10-year treasuries turned downwards. It broke its progression of higher reaction lows for the first time in its 30-year history. Well, that's a big deal. That's something that could potentially be a very big deal when one thinks about what the outlook is for that market over the medium term. So, well, when we think about it over in those types of characteristics, well, we're thinking then more in terms of topping activity. How long will the top formation development take? Well, the way that bond prices are rallying at present, it might take a while longer. We could see a type 3 type top forming, and well, the defining characteristics of those are ranging time and size. Well, major bull markets don't end with a whimper. They end with a war between supply and demand. And considering just how polar polar opposite the views are in the bond markets, well, then the likelihood of this major bull market in bonds ending with a mere whimper is unlikely. What is, I think, a very sound argument is that bond markets or bond funds don't have a yield to maturity. They have to constantly manage duration. Well, since that's the case, they are, well, and with yields where they are right now, close to to all-time lows, well, in order to outperform, you're reliant on capital appreciation. Well, you're getting a little bit of capital appreciation right now, but you're certainly not getting the higher yields. It means that, well, bond funds are going to be reliant on yield or on special situations in order to gain outperformance. And where one would perhaps be better served is to look at equities that have got long records of increasing their dividends from a fixed income type perspective. Well, companies are certainly better capitalized than their respective governments. Well, the fact that we're getting this commonality in the bond markets, it isn't just the long bond in US treasuries, but it's gilts and bunds, and the Swiss, Australian and Canadian 10-years are all breaking out. So people are thinking to the long end of the curve, and they're betting on curve flattening. Well, when you think about the way people are viewing the economy, then gold prices are continuing to range in the region of 1300, and they're finishing out the week at 1292. Well, if you look at that on a daily basis, what you're presented with are two upside key day reversals in the last month. And overall, over the last 6 weeks, a very triangular pattern. Well, that means that the lows are falling the lows are rising and the highs are falling. Well, generally speaking, these types of triangular patterns are resolved by emphatic breakouts. Well, which way is it going to break out? Well, if you listen to institutional-type people, they are all saying that gold is going to resolve to the downside and that we're going to see a retest of the lows and potentially even lower than that, that people are talking about $1,000. Well, that's a possibility. Well, on the physical side, physical in any kind of size is pretty rare. And, that means that there isn't too much gold about. Well, that at least helps to explain why prices have been ranging between about $1,200 and $1,400 for much of the last year. Well, I can't tell you, and nobody else can either, whether we're going to see this price breaking upwards. But what we are seeing, if we look at commonality, is that, well, palladium prices have been ranging higher. They were as high as 838 today and are back around 830, but last month they were closer to 765. And platinum, which has been ranging in a pretty tight range for, well, much of the last 2 years, was back up to test the $1,500 area this week. It's pulling back from that area in here today, but well, the lows are rising. Well, supply of these monetary metals is pretty tight. And, well, it's the outlook for what's exactly happening in the institutional sector has been the marginal buyer and seller for gold over the last 18 months. Well, institutional buying of gold and people accumulating positions as investment positions was a major tailwind for gold and a headwind for gold last year. Well, the ETF holdings moved to new lows in April, but certainly the pace of selling has decreased. Well, arguments are pretty evenly balanced, and well, that's what you'd expect in this type of environment. But, well, two upward dynamics in the last month, I'd be willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But, well, let's see the evidence. Well, gold is in oil is also trading in a reasonably tight range, and well, $100 on Brent crude represents a floor and has been a floor for quite some time. Well, the spread between WTI and Brent has compressed quite considerably. Well, ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and oil has been ranging now for nearly 2 years, particularly when you look at Brent. Well, eventually that range is going to be resolved one way or the other, but the chances are that it would require really quite a significant deterioration in geopolitics for prices to move substantially above where they are right now. Well, veteran subscribers will be more than familiar with our view that, well, we think that energy prices in inflation-adjusted terms are going to trend lower from later this decade, that the advances that we've seen in unconventional oil and gas represent massive potential for supply growth on a global basis, and beyond that, that the advances that we're seeing in terms of the efficiencies that can be gained from solar power, well, they represent the potential for massive efficiency gains in terms of energy consumption and production in the next decades. Well, if you think that we were that solar panels performed with an efficiency of about 4% in the early 1970s and were up to 44% in here today, and that technology companies are looking on solar and applying Moore's law in that they anticipate that the costs will improve and efficiencies will improve in an inverse correlation, so that we really could have a very big deal. Well, people are also starting to invest in different kinds of fusion. Well, fusion is the holy grail in terms of energy. It's always been about 30 years away. Well, we won't have, I don't think there's any reason to get particularly excited about it until we actually see evidence. But on the off chance that something actually happens with solar, well, then we're going to be at the beginning of a secular bull market, probably unlike anything else that's ever been seen. Well, technological innovation probably gives us a little bit better odds than we might previously have had that might actually happen. We're on an exponential growth curve in terms of technological innovation. Well, the fact that you have the internet and that just about everything that we've learned as a species is now available for anybody who wants it, then, well, that helps with innovation, that we've got increasingly more people and that the productive capacity of ever more of our people are being unleashed means that not only do we have technological innovation, but that we have the potential for labor productivity growth on a global basis because more people are being given the opportunity to reach their full potential. Well, that's a really big deal. That means that as we go forward and we look at the next number of decades, that we have gone through a very difficult period over the last 15 years, but that we've had a major breakout, that the S&P has broken up out of a 13-year range, and on every other occasion it's done that, it has been at the beginning of secular bull markets. Well, you don't get a secular bull market unless you get productivity growth. Well, we're getting that in terms of the growth, in terms of energy, in terms of the technological development that is increasingly being put to work in the industrial sector. Well, the confluence, it's not simply that we have one technology or another coming to the fore, but that we have a range of different technologies becoming available, everything from 3D printing to embedded processing, and the fact that the new technologies that are coming online are being used together so that you're getting multiplication effects. Well, that's one side of the technology argument, but also the fact of availability. Well, it's all well and good to have technology, but that when you make that technology available to an ever greater proportion of the global economy, well, then the potential for productivity growth is really quite meaningful. Well, also the fact that we have more people, that we have a very young global population, and that that won't last forever. And the global population will probably peak out at some point in the next 20 years, but in the intervening 20 years, well, we have more people, and their productivity is likely to improve. So those are pretty solid arguments for why we should have a secular bull market. Well, the big question then is, what are we going to do about all the debt? And well, that probably means that we're going to get a first step above the base, that we're nearly 5 years into a secular bull market, that it's looking increasingly mature, but that any significant pullback can be viewed as a buying opportunity, and that most people have been conditioned over the last 13 years to be traders, but that in a secular bull market, buy and hold really is the better strategy. Well, if that's the case, then when we look at currencies, well, an awful lot of the strength in some currencies over the last decade has been predicated on the weakness of the US dollar. Well, the Europeans really do need a weak currency, and the dollar is as low as it has been in at least the last few years. If you think of in terms not so much in the short term or even the medium term, but over the long term, the dollar is pretty much is pretty weak in here. And there is well, there's a lot of potential for it to improve. And well, the pound is probably one of the only major currencies where people are starting to think about raising interest rates. Well, the pound is trading around the 170 area, and that's the upper side of its base relative to the US dollar. It looks like that we're going to see some of the very weak currencies, the currencies that people haven't really been looking at very much for the last number of years, doing better, and those that well, that did so well in the last decade, we're going to have much more currency variability, not least in Asia. And China in particular is using its currency as a policy tool, well, just like everybody else. But it looks like we're going to see a weaker yuan, a weaker euro, a somewhat stronger pound, and, well, the commodity currencies could strengthen in here with commodity prices doing that bit better. But commodity prices doing that bit better are generally late in the cycle moves in terms of the cyclical bull market. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for the afternoon. Wish all the best to all of you.